Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode of Beauty Bosses with my longtime early Beauty Boss guest who's back with us, Gwen Whiting. Thank you so much for being here. No, we're friends. Let me tell you guys a little bit about Gwen because she has such an amazing story and I can't wait to get into talking about your journey. So Gwen is a designer and entrepreneur who's best known for being kind of a cleaning queen. She is the founder of The Laundress, the eco-friendly cleaning brand that you built into a global success. It eventually got acquired in 2019 by Unilever, and then more recently, you have kind of dovetailed back into a niche cleaning community with The Fill, a members-only cleaning community that's focused on wellness and sustainability as well as luxury, which we love all those things. We love a clean and luxurious moment.
Exactly, a clean start.
I love that. Everyone wants a nice, clean, fresh start. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's so fun to be back.
I know, I'm happy to see you after all these years. I think we last spoke 5 or 7 years ago, and so much has changed. Yeah, yeah. So much has changed in the world and with you.
And yeah, we were admiring how you were the early adopter of podcasting and yes, having important conversations like this.
Back in the olden days of podcasts. So I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your origin story, because most of us think of cleaning as a chore that we begrudgingly have to do, but this has sort of been in your DNA for a very long time. You studied textiles, including cleaning processes. You started a big company focused on cleaning. Tell us a little bit about your origin and how you found yourself here.
So I had a textile background, but I was really studying, my degree was in fashion and apparel design. And I was in my early 20s when I came up with the Laundress concept. And it was really driven from the fact that I had I was investing in pieces, I was investing in jeans and t-shirts and cashmere sweaters and all these things, and everything said dry clean or dry clean only on the tags. And the only products available were, you know, in the grocery store, Tide or Woolite or dry cleaning. And I knew from my background that neither of them were appropriate or necessary. And so that's how I really got into the cleaning business, to really be able to properly take care of the pieces that I had. And everyone has dirty laundry. And I just knew that this was an area that could be serviced better with more innovation and a better product.
Yeah, that's, and it spoke to so many people. I think there was nothing that really existed in the space between Tide and Woolite, right, and the right, dry cleaner. Yeah, and so that intermediate lane is where most people live.
Yeah, and I really, really, you know, created this category of specialty cleaning. And it was in 2004 when I launched The Laundress, which was very early. Now, like, niche brands and small businesses and entrepreneurship is like a thing and it's normal. But at the time, it was very rare to go against a giant company. I mean, I started The Laundress with a $100,000 SBA loan and taking on a $13 billion cleaning industry. It was unheard of.
And from the start, The Laundress felt elevated and aspirational, which I think is so interesting. How did you approach brand identity and storytelling in that category to differentiate it from some of the big players and also from in-person opportunities?
I mean, everything was intuitive, so it's not like I hired a marketing agency or studied even marketing. It was just completely, for me, intuitive of, here was an everyday chore. It can and should be more luxurious. People, this is how we spend our time. This is how we spend our money. And there's a better way to do it. And kind of driving our customer experience away from the power of a grocery store and really being intentional about what I was developing. And I was also very passionate about the know-how. So educating and empowering a customer how to best care was as important to me as making the best cleaning solutions.
What were some of the biggest challenges in scaling a product-based business? Because at this time, back in 2004, the concept of sustainability and luxury and just this niche in the market didn't even really exist.
This is true. I came from designing. I worked for Ralph Lauren, so I was building from luxury principles, which was using the best ingredients and the best know-how and the best craftsmanship. Those were the principles that I was parlaying into an everyday product. And the product ethos was also that it was elevated, it was luxurious experience, but it was still attainable. The comparison to a grocery product was nominal in price, and compared to dry cleaning, it was an incredible savings. So all of these message points were being built, and the fact that it was eco, and that also was sort of a non-understood point of differentiation as well. So it was very difficult to kind of have people understand that what it was and what we were doing, because I was also not selling in traditional spaces. The brand wasn't developed to sell at a grocery store. We were selling everywhere other than in grocery.
What were your initial entry points into traditional retail?
Because the brand was, I say it was friends with everyone. So we complemented everyone else's business, where if you sold bedding or baby or bras or home goods, it was a service that made their product look better and make them, you know, appear that they cared about the aftercare of what they were selling. So it was a friendly product, but also pushing the norms of what people sold. So to be sold from like Net-a-Porter and Barney's to a hardware store or, you know, a home retailer. So it was a very unusual model that we could be sold in all of these different categories where normal brands are sort of fragmented out.
Yeah, and I love that you were able to meet your customers where they are, because in some ways the company was the ultimate complementary good, like in economics where you have coffee and sugar and they go together, right? Or, you know, sugar and milk, you need one with the other.
Exactly.
And I like the idea that you were able to reach different kinds of buyers at different types of utility and luxury price points and experiences just by being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting. And I think even today, it's been, you know, more than 20 years since this started, the way consumers are buying is changing. So do you feel like there are any echoes of what you were doing way back then today?
Well, it's interesting because I was reflecting over the weekend of how I survived 2008 and the economic crisis.
Yes. Get ready to survive.
Get ready. And I was reflecting on all the lessons learned then. But the Laundress was built in scale. It was very difficult because it was a bootstrap business. So it was, I started with the SBA loan. I funded with credit cards in 2008. Every credit card got basically canceled, so there was no more available credit that way. And the business was forced to have to be profitable very quickly because we were running on such a, you know, low tank of resources. So it felt like the never-ending startup. I mean, it was like 17 years of this never-ending startup. But I strongly believe and really speak to the small business mindset. And it allows you to be, you know, to pivot and to really focus on where your return is going to be and where you're best going to service your customers. And reflections on 2008 is all of those things. How are you adding value? How are you an essential? How are you, you know, bringing solutions into people's homes? It's all the key principles.
And you did all these interesting collaborations with Le Labo and John Mayer and completely unexpected things. How do you feel like that helped with brand positioning, and what made you want to do things that were so outside of the norm at that time?
Those programs really elevated our awareness to finding different customers and bringing other people aware of the brand. You know, that was all done before social media. So it's, you know, I have to date myself that, you know, Instagram didn't exist at that time. I mean, John Mayer was very, very early in social media. So that program was towards, you know, around that time. But Le Labo, J. Crew, there wasn't even Instagram at the time. So it was a bit more traditional business building and media awareness. But I also believe now in my second chapter that building with social isn't where it's at anymore. I mean, it's a very different landscape than it was where I was building with social platforms, building at the same time where you could really meet, you know, reach people, and social commerce was just beginning. And so, you know, we'll talk about what I'm doing now, but it's intertwined on building differently.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. What went into your decision to sell The Laundress, and what have you learned about entrepreneurship and the transition to life after that sale? Because this was the main fabric, no pun intended, of your life for a very long time.
Yeah.
What made you decide that it was the right time to sell to Unilever?
I mean, the goal of selling was that the business would outgrow me and my capabilities, and that selling to a giant CPG company would really be able to bring my incredible brand and products to many laundry rooms around the world. That was really, I was already selling globally, but really bringing it more to more people.
And had you been bootstrapped the whole time?
The whole time.
The whole entire time. You had 100% equity until the very end.
Okay. Yes, it was a lot. A lot of growing pains. But you kind of work towards this goal. It's like, you know, working towards your medical degree, or like working, and then you finally get to the finish line, and it's kind of like, oh wait, now what? You know, I thought I was sending my baby to college, and that it would really flourish and become this wonderful experience. But I stayed with the brand for my 2-year contract, and unfortunately, my experience with Unilever was unexpectedly not positive.
Can you share a little bit more about that?
I just had expectations of people of corporate care, and I like drank the Kool-Aid of what their belief system or what they claim their belief systems are, and in reality and in practice, I didn't see that upflow to my company.
Yeah. The Laundress post acquisition faced a major recall. What were some of your takeaways from that experience, just watching this brand that you had built for so long go through a crisis?
It was incredibly heartbreaking. I was not with the brand, and I found out from my girlfriend that forwarded me a post from Instagram that they were initiating this enormous public recall. And it was heartbreaking, but devastating, just because it was from complete negligence of Unilever and mismanagement of my company. And the heartbreak not only lies with watching 20 years of my life go proverbially down the drain, but how it really impacted negatively the hundreds of thousands of customers that I got their trust and that they trusted me for all those years to provide an incredible product that was safe and good for them and their families. And then not to mention all of my business partners in the U.S. and globally that were tremendously financially affected by Unilever's negligence.
Yeah, because trust for anything, whether it's in surgery or skincare or laundry, trust is built one iterative step at a mm-hmm. time, and it can be eroded in just a second.
Yeah.
Like you can build trust over decades and then take it away in 1 minute.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
very startling.
Yeah, it was upsetting, and I wasn't particularly publicly separated from the brand, so and I was under a 5-year non-disparaging clause, which I didn't even really realize until I went back and read the papers at that time, it wasn't safe for me to say anything to anyone about anything about what was going on with Unilever.
Right. these experiences, the good ones, the bad ones, the growing ones, have all led you to the point where you are right now, which is an exciting new chapter. Mm-hmm. You have created a new cleaning community for fellow luxury cleaning enthusiasts. So tell us.
Make a clean comeback.
Clean start.
Yes. I mean, it was very upsetting to let down my clean community that I had built and cherished. I mean, I really, you know, it took my community very seriously in what I did. And, you know, I was done with laundry. I did it. I created the best brand. There was no more work to do. But then after, you know, Unilever basically, you know, took my brand away from all of these people and it will never exist from what I built, I felt a responsibility to go back into the laundry room and start again. And, you know, I'm happy I'm here and it's an exciting time to start fresh, but also be 20 years better. You know, it's exciting to recreate the category I created again, but in a new way. And, you know, with different learnings and also, you know, 20 years of improvements, formulaically, there's a lot has happened, but also from a new point of view. So the Laundress was really focused on, you know, this new experience, but also really hinged on fine fragrance. And the orientation of the fill is completely wellness centered. And I don't want perfume anymore. I can't wear, you know, I can't wear it, use it. I don't want to be around it. But I am very big in aromatherapy and essential oils. And that's what I've infused into the Phil brand, which is you can have wellness benefits through aromatherapy while you're cleaning. So you might as well get the benefits and use that from the results.
That's really interesting. I feel like there's also a greater societal interest in cleaning and the rituals of personal wellness and everything from the trad wives who are kind of really leaning into the new generation of domestic goddesses to regular people who just gain pleasure from having a very organized closet.
Sure.
Like cleaning culture has become a little bit more of a thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I love the embrace of that. And that's, you know, and so many iterations from like Maria Kondo to you know, all of these things. But fundamentally, I think that with our overlap in our industries is that, you know, people are aware of what they're putting on their body, in their, you know, with what they're using on their skin. And that's very important. People are caring about what they're eating and what they're ingesting and putting into their body. I can't tell you how many people say to me, but I don't do my laundry, I don't know, I don't care. And I'm always like, well, you should care because you're spending 99% of your life, of your day in your laundry, whether it's the sheets that you sleep in, your underwear, that's like your closest intimate to your body. You should be caring what that is. And it's kind of like my analogy is, you might not be cooking your hamburger, but I bet you care what's in the hamburger.
Exactly. And I think that also when we think about things like personal care and skincare, where this is, you know, your largest organ and your cells are in communication with the world. We don't exist in a vacuum.
We exist
within the space of the serums we put on, the clothes we put on, the detergent we use to wash them. And
absolutely.
Well, that's amazing. Tell us a little bit about what is going to happen next for you. What do you have on the horizon? Where are you going with the fill? Any exciting daydreams you have in your mind?
I mean, I'm excited to be building differently. I'm not looking to build a giant CPG brand. I did that already. I'm excited to be building a small business. I love small business. I think small business should be celebrated and respected. And to me, it's really about my community first and adding value to my Phil members community. It's a private members club, but it's exclusive, but it's inclusive, so anyone can join. It's a nominal annual fee to be part of it, and that also allows you to shop at your leisure. So it's not subscription, it's not like a forced purchase, it's whatever suits your lifestyle. And just really focusing on my personal know-how, which, you know, I was so disheartened. I went to a dinner, a fashion adjacent event last week, and this woman was telling me, like, oh, I don't know how to do any of this. Like, I don't know how to do this, or I wish I knew how to do that. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, my work is not done. Even though I spent 20 years helping people and sharing my know-how, it's an evergreen. You know, it's like the next generation needs needs to know what I know and share that with them. The difference is that my know-how isn't public anymore. It's private for my community. So I'm not sharing open source all of my information on my website or on social media. If you know, my personal help is for my people.
Do you feel like that's a response to the protectiveness that you feel in the wake of all of the ups and downs you've had?
I think there's a bit of that, but I also don't necessarily need to be for everybody. You know, it's like a little bit more private.
Find your people.
Yeah, find your community. People. Like, I don't need to talk to everybody. I want to talk to the people who, you know, who want to be learning and hearing from me.
Amazing. Well, it's so great to chat with you, and I'm so excited to see what happens next. I might have to become a member of the Phil. I don't know if I am going to be doing enough laundry to earn my keep in the Phil, but I might.
I know you have a large family, so I know there's lots of beds and laundry to do.
Yes,
so.
And I can't wait, and you always make the best product, so I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.